Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for a special short episode today. A lot of you have probably seen the recent Warren Sharp comments about the Ravens' quote-unquote lack of success in one-score games. We're going to get into some detail on that. Joining me to do that is Brandon Krogstad. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Always happy to join you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Now, here's what's funny about this. You suggested this topic long before this Warren Sharp crapola came out. So, you know, there's a lot to dig into here, and it became more of an issue for me, obviously, when there's basically some poo slinging going on. But it's frankly worth discussing, and it was a good topic. I thought so at the time. You suggested this, what, about a month ago, would you say?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a while. So I want to say Brandon beat others to the punch in terms of this kind of an understanding or this, you know, wanting to talk about this thing. So Brandon, why don't you introduce the topic here? And I know you've done some research as well, and I certainly have some as well here over the last week or so. But talk about it from your perspective.
Sure. The Ravens obviously have been an excellent team, and they have been an excellent team with Lamar in particular. Lamar's won about 75% of his games started over the course of his career. But just the last 5 years, they've been a pretty average team in one score games. Now, with Lamar, they've been 20-18, so just barely above 500 in the regular season and 1-2 in the playoffs in one score games. Obviously, the Bills game last year and the Chiefs game 2 years ago were the two playoff losses that were by one score. And, there can be just a question of exactly what's going on with one score games, because they are excellent when it comes to blowouts. Like, it's literally been 3 full seasons since the last time the Ravens have lost Lamar's start by more than one score. Mm-hmm. The last one was that November game against Miami Thursday night, and that was the last time they lost a one score game. That's three full seasons.
A two score game. Yep.
Two score games. Yeah. So, yeah, that's, literally three full seasons ago. And they blow teams out at an extraordinary measure. When you consider every team loses at least one game by one score, and for the Ravens to not have any losses over three seasons is, just very, very unheard of. And it shows the quality of the team and the quality that Lamar brings to the team.
Okay. I want to respond to two things you've got there, because you hit on the last one. It's very important. The quality of the team and the quality of any football team is much more evident in their multi-score games than in their single score games. Why is that? Well, effectively, what you're measuring with the multi-score wins or the larger ones, they make a bigger contribution to total point differential, and total point differential, much better indicator of whether a team is a great team or not. We're going to get to what the Ravens' record in two-score games is, but great teams in any sport will win a much higher percentage of their multi-score games than of their single-score games, or of their close games than if you're talking about basketball or something where one-point games don't you don't have as many of those. But if you take three or less point games and 20-point games, your great teams are going to have much better record in 20-plus point games. The Ravens follow that profile exactly, as I would expect. Point number two about this is I'm not accepting Warren Sharp's horseshit, cherry-picked 2020 to the present thing. And I'll tell you why. 2018, 2019, Lamar led the Ravens to great seasons, and he's the MVP in one, and he had a great run in the other. But the fact is, the matter is, the 2019 season carries much more portent for the 2025 season than the 2021 or 22 season does. It's more relevant to how great a quarterback Lamar was relative to the rest of the league. So cherry picking that out, and in fact, Lamar was 8-2 in one score games during those two periods, is just ridiculous. It's something you need to check yourself from doing. And I know why he did it, because he's trying to create some stat that's like, oh my God, look at the Ravens, they suck at this, and he'll literally use inflammatory language of that type. I think his actual thing was, you guys have been incredibly horrible, the people he's talking to on air actually played the games, kind of thing. But anyway, those are the two things about it. So what I used is, for the Ravens, I used since Lamar's first start, which happened on 11/18/18. And for other teams, and I've got a lot of other teams' records I included, I used the beginning of the 2018 season. It is a slight difference between the two. A little more in terms of results for the other teams, but the period for which we're looking forward to 25, which is the actionable component of anything you say about the current Ravens' inability to win one score games, looking forward to 25, I think is best represented by the Lamar Jackson era itself.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you had, I know, some other very good detail on what the Ravens had done in those one score games.
Sure. So, some of the issues that they've averaged about almost 1.5 turnovers game, 1.4 turnovers per game in those one score games. That's a much higher than they have in, all games considered, that they average.
You happen to have the not number for that. So you have
it. It was .7. It was .6 something. So yeah, it's almost double the amount of turnovers in those games, and also penalties. They averaged just under 7.5 penalties a game, which is higher than their normal. But they last year they were the highest penalized team in the league. So your penalties kind of have been an issue for this team over, several seasons, but, in these close games, they have more penalties than they normally do in, more decided games. So, there is some, if you're playing a blowout game, you're going to be less aggressive. You're not going to pick up a pass interference or, you know, defensive holding penalty because you're playing off coverage or something like that. So, you know, there are some reasons to explain it, but, you know, 7.5 penalties is too much for any game, especially, you know, even tight games like that.
Okay, so I'm with you on the difference. And by the way, when you said 1.4 and 0.7 and the turnovers, I'll start with that. First of all, I would expect that. I think it just doesn't shock me as a number that creates a difference. If you look at the one score games, we already know the Ravens won just over 50% of those games. In fact, they've won 54.4% of their games decided by one score since 2008, since the first Lamar start. And that's a very good record overall. I'll get into that a little bit later. But it's also the worst of the Ravens games, because when there's a blowout game, they win a vast majority of those games. And we already know turnovers mm-hmm. are highly correlated to wins. Mm-hmm. So I would expect you to certainly have a better turnover ratio and fewer turnovers in your wins. And that's basically what you're telling me with saying I looked at the one score games and I had more turnovers per game. So sure. That result should be wholly expected by anybody who's looking at this. I think I did also have an actuarial student come at me once, and a lot of people who've heard the show may have heard this story in whole or part before. But the guy sat down and he said he'd done a study in college that showed that fumbles were not particularly well correlated to wins, and interceptions were. Okay. And I kind of had to hold back my smirk for a second. I asked him, well, why do you think that is? And he started talking about the yardage and the chance of a return, and there's a pick six. And it didn't make any sense. I had to stop him and say, no, it's not that. It's the fact that fumbles might occur on any play. But when you are trying to come back, when you're trailing in a football game, you exchange turnover risk in exchange for yardage. That's exactly what you're doing. You're throwing it all four downs.
You're passing more. And
you'll force the ball out of tight windows because you have to. You're playing four down football or whatever it might be. But it's natural that there would be turnovers in such situations. So we got to be really careful with context when we talk about these kind of things.
Yeah, and then also, you know, to go besides that, I mean, when a defense knows that you're passing the majority of the time, they're keying on the pass, and the most effective offenses are the ones that keep you off balance. They run when they expect you to pass, they pass when you expect you to run, and, you know, that also, you know, reduces your turnovers as well. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I kind of wanted to go back and look at the Ravens record over this period. And I'm using 2018 to the present. I did all my, the Lamar Jackson era. And I just want to go through that and explain why I think it's a completely normal pattern. And it's a good pattern in general, I think, for the Ravens. But then any comments you might have on this are certainly more than welcome here, Brandon. This is your topic. I just happen to have done some work on it in the last few days because of this other stuff that's going on. Let me get to my own profile here. I got to look at there it is. Okay. So here's the Ravens record since the beginning of the Lamar era. They played, that's the Steelers. I'm sorry. I'll get to the Ravens here in a second. Okay. So the Ravens have played 107 regular season games since Lamar's first start. In 40 plus games, they are 1-0. The only win was that Miami 59-10 win. In 30 to 39 point games, games decided by 30 to 39, they're 9-0. In games decided by 20 to 29, they are 9-2. And games decided by 10 to 19, they're 24-5. In games decided by 0-9, and they, by the way, they've never had a 9-point game in the era. So all these are actually 0-8. So they're all one score games. They're 31-26. And that includes 4-6 in games that Lamar did not start, and another 1-1 in games that Lamar did not play the last snap when the game was with one score. It's been lots of games Lamar hasn't finished because he's been out in the fourth quarter with the Ravens up two or three scores. but or more. But when he didn't play the last snap at one score, it's because he was injured. And those two games, the Ravens actually went 1-1 in a 10-9 win over Denver and another loss to Cleveland during that era. So if you take out those games, and I would just probably take out the 4-6 and leave his starts in there. He's 27-20 in his career in games decided by one score. Now, if, first of all, what does that tell you? That whole sequence of stuff, does that tell you anything about Lamar in particular?
I mean, it tells you that he's a winning quarterback no matter what. That's that's number one. And, you know, like, you know, it's very similar to other great quarterbacks like Josh Allen. He's 22-17 over the last 5 years in one score game. So, you know, Josh Allen's obviously one of the best. I mean, I'd say the outlier is Mahomes, who has been a ridiculous 36-12 over the last 5 years in one score games, including 11-0 last year and 9-1 in the playoffs, which is, you know,
unreal,
unbelievable. I mean, I think, you know, part of that is a testament to how good Mahomes is, also how good the coaching is, that they, you know, execute and, you know, have that. I almost kind of consider them like the 03-04 Patriots with Belichick and Brady, where they won a ton of close games in a row just because, you know, they executed well and they waited for the opponent to make a mistake and not make mistakes themselves. And that's how they won. And that's a lot of what the Chiefs do as well. Yeah.
Is it sustainable?
Is it sustainable? Obviously not. Being that good over 5 years is a huge, I would say a huge aberration. It's not just, I would not think it's sustainable over these next 5 years. I don't think it's predictable of that, but there, you know, and this might be an aberration that Lamar's, you know, basically a barely above 500 over the last 5 years. And it could be these next 5 years, they're going to have that mentality because they have great coaching. You know, obviously Lamar's a great quarterback. They might have, you know, the next 5 years, they might have that a very similar, you know, excellent record in these close games as well. So, And you put that on top of the fact that, I mean, no team blows out teams the way the Ravens do. No team blows out quality teams. Like, they're not blowing out the Browns and the Jets of the world. They blew out the Lions that were in the NFC Championship game. They blew out the Bills last year. They blew out just playoff teams. You know, these last 2 years, I think you had, you know, a stat that they've had the most wins the last 2 years against playoff teams like in NFL history, and a good amount of them have been blowout wins.
Yes, that's correct. And they had, you know, they're 5-5 in two score games in 23, I think it was, against. There was something about it. I forget it was the best record or whatever. But the last 2 years, the Ravens have gone 10-4 and then 9-3 against teams with records, finished with records over 500. And those are the two highest win totals on an island. There's nobody else with nine in the history of the National Football League. Now, there is something going on with that the 17-game season has created. Okay. Fewer 8-8. Well, obviously, there's no more 500 teams unless you go 8-8-1.
Right.
So it really has created more opportunity for it. It's still incredibly impressive, impressive.
And I can't imagine that many wins were against teams that ended up finishing 9-8 anyway. I mean, most of those winning teams were, you know, at least 10-7 or better.
Yeah, they had some of that. So they had, like, last year the Bengals ended up winning their final game of the year to go 9-8. So I don't want to tell you there's none of that in there. And the Ravens beat the Bengals twice, of course. So their profile of wins against those teams is incredibly impressive. You don't have to try and if anybody wants to try and belittle it by saying, "Oh, look, you had four wins against 9-8 teams. Who cares?" kind of thing. Well, then it would be 15-7 if you want to take those out. Is that a bad record versus, you know, winning teams?
Exactly.
Oh, point I want to make, you know, I said this earlier, is that the Ravens 43-7 record in two score games is, first of all, it tells you the most about the quality of the roster going forward into 25. They've completely dominated those games, and it's because they're a great team and they don't mm-hmm. lose these games by two scores. You mentioned it, you know, in terms of going backwards. It's not something blowout games the Ravens will almost always work. So if I'm looking at 2025 and I'm saying, how's this season going to play out? They played 47% of their games that have been decided by two or more games and completely dominated those. I think they will play maybe eight more games this year out of 17 that would be decided by two scores. So 7.99 would be 47% of 17. Mm-hmm. If I would expect, you know, given the quality of this roster, that they might win seven of those games. They've won 86% of their games by two scores. They're 43-7 since 2018 or in the Lamar era. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that they'd lose one game. Maybe it would break the streak, but would not lose two and would win their others. And then it's a great start to your season, if you want to think of it that way, to start off with a 7-1 record. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have to coast home in those final nine games, okay, and figure out how can I do it. Here's the paradox, and here's why the one score games is so difficult. It's a lot easier, and I mean orders of magnitude easier, to ask a team to have one more blowout or maybe two to cut your number of one score games than it is to win one more one score game. To win one more sure. one score game. Because 6-3, okay, I would expect the Ravens to go, by the way, 5-4 in their one score games. If they do that, you know, they'll be 12-5 again for the season. They'll be competing for one of the top seeds. But they might not be the number one, obviously, if they go 12-5, probably will not be. So they might need some positive variation either in multi-score games or one score games. But mm-hmm. it's a hell of a lot easier to win one more blowout game than it is to go 6-3 in one score games. That's just that requires sure. circumstance and luck and other things to be on your side. The Chiefs have done it remarkably over an extended period here, and the other team that's done it a fair amount is the Steelers, who really masked right. mediocrity with right. good success in one score games.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, overall, like, I think, you know, one of the important things that they're going to have to do just for success in all games is, I think a big thing is cutting down on the penalties. They were the most penalized team mm-hmm. last year. They had several games, you know, a couple of games where they lost, where they had 9, 10 or more penalties in those particular games. I mean, when you are probably going to have probably a little, at least some regression on turnovers. I mean, you can't expect Lamar to only throw four interceptions yep. again this year. You know, you have to figure out other ways to cut down on your mistakes. And, you know, penalties is one that I think is a big flashing red light that's saying, you know, that has to be approved on. They can't be the most penalized team in the league. And I think, you know, it caused me a little worry, like their recent training camp, they had like something like six pre-snap penalties in yep. one practice, which is completely unacceptable. I hope Harbaugh got on them big time in, you know, whatever meetings that they had, because that cannot be, you know, something that can be acceptable.
So, funny story here. Okay, so first of all, all 4 days of camp so far, and we're recording this on Sunday the 27th. So my camp notes are out there for the 23rd through the 26th, and this information is all in there. But the Ravens have had a bunch of problems with false starts, and one of the things they're doing, and this is why you kind of need to understand it, because Monken is not going to simplify the cadence to create fewer false start penalties, which would be one thing they could do if they wanted to have cleaner practices where they got their offensive plays off got their reps through and did these right, but it doesn't replicate real season experience. It doesn't replicate what'll happen during the regular season when you will want to, you know, vary up your cadence and
sure, you don't want to do that in the regular season. Yeah, you need to change your cadence. Sure.
But every single day they've begun with set and snap drills, which I know you're familiar with this, Brandon, because you played a lot of football, but they don't even have their helmets on when they're doing it. What they do is they get in the huddle, they run to the line of scrimmage, they get set as quickly as possible, they snap the ball, they get out of their stance. They're looking for a few things: clean exchange from the center to the quarterback. They're looking for no false start penalties. They're looking for people to be in the right place, offensively and defensively, and they're looking for the players to get off the line of scrimmage quickly, which, by the way, that's really important because you have to test the player on both sides. You have to test him. Yeah, you need to get off quickly, and yeah, you need to hold your water until it's time for to not be flagged for a false start. Even after that, they had one false start during that drill, and then they had six more false starts yesterday. It's been reported as five. It was six. I've been counting them every day. Six more got flagged during the 11-on-11 drills. Mm-hmm. A 7-on-7 doesn't have this problem because they don't snap the ball in the same way, so they don't really have false starts for that. But the 11-on-11 drills have been a mess of false starts, and part of it is the Ravens are really challenging their players with cadence that is not simple. They're not running every play on one.
Sure. Yeah. And hopefully, them making those mistakes now, will clean up things in the regular season. But I mean, it's not just that, it's, it's the roughing the passers.
Oh, yeah.
The pass interference, the holdings, those penalties, are obviously very big also. They're field position changers, automatic first downs. Those are the huge plays that you don't want to, that you need to work on as well.
Okay. So first of all, completely agree with your comments. And now we've seen a couple of different moves by the Ravens. The first was that they went to Warhop last year, and it actually took Warhop quite a while to kind of get the offensive line into a reduced penalty situation. And a lot of the offensive penalties are holding, illegal man downfield, illegal formation penalties, which are, as you've heard me say on the show, much more important than the false starts. The false starts cost of doing business in a certain way. I want them to be low, but I realize they'll never be zero. Okay. Mm-hmm. And also they have the least cost because they're 5 yards only. The defense has no option related to the enforcement of a false start. They can actually decline it, and maybe they would on delay of game occasionally in a punting situation, say, but in most cases they would never choose to decline a false start. So it's 5 yards only. If you have an illegal downfield penalty, that's 5 yards also, but the defense has an incredibly valuable option to decline. And so not only do you potentially lose a big play by having a guy illegally downfield that probably didn't contribute anyway to anything with what he did, but you also, give the defense the opportunity to decline if it was an incomplete pass on third down, say, or if it was, a play that went for a loss anyway, or a turnover.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, a good amount of those illegal man downfield penalties were kind of on Lamar, in that, most of those times it's either an RPO where, he's deciding whether to, hand the ball off or, throw to the quick receiver. And, a lot of times you'll see Lamar like double clutch that ball, double clutch that throw. And when he needs to make that decision, and whatever decision he makes, he needs to stand firm with it. Cause once he double clutches and then throws it, you probably have, one or two linemen, 2 yards, 3 yards downfield, and that's illegal man downfield. I mean, there was another couple of plays on screenplays where he held the ball, a couple of seconds too long and then threw it. And, by that time, I think one of the linemen, or I think it might have been a receiver in another case, was already, blocking and got an offensive pass interference play, or, another illegal man downfield. And I think they got clear, they got cleaned up, because they had a lot, I think, in the first 10 weeks of the season. And then they really cleaned that up in the second half. And I think Lamar was really cognizant of it. And, you know, I've also found it encouraging that he was cognizant of it, because in the playoff game with the Bills, when he lost that fumble.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything, from stress to sleepless nights, with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Well, he mentioned, like, I wanted to throw it away, but it was an RPO, and we would have gotten a penalty on it. And so, yeah. So that's why he held on into it and ended up fumbling the ball. And I guess that result, you almost rather take the incomplete and the illegal man downfield than a fumble.
You don't always get to know the result. I'll just say this about the linemen and their relationship with Lamar. Lamar's a special quarterback. The Ravens completely lean into who he is as a quarterback, including all the fakery behind the line of scrimmage, the extended plays and whatnot. Offensive linemen have very little to offer once they get into level two in terms of the true value of their blocks on a play like that. Even on a screen pass, honestly, it's pretty limited how much an offensive player can help you, and particularly when you consider how often they really help you getting ahead of that play and making a block. It's fairly limited.
Yeah.
The onus is for the Baltimore Ravens is on the offensive linemen to be sure that the ball is out before they head downfield. And while it's true that there are RPO risks that come with Lamar, I think that there was much more in terms of what I saw where it was drift and players getting thrown into level two in some cases where they were really upset about it, but the defensive linemen kind of push-pulled them into level two and got them out there in space.
before it happened. The onus is completely on the offensive linemen within the structure of how the Ravens try and win football games. Lamar, the last thing I want is Lamar altering his game on RPO plays go with his first read or the first time he moves the ball. I want him to manipulate the hell out of those defenders. And what he can do is, it might be, I don't think I'd be overstating to say it's 10 times as valuable. It could be 50 times as valuable as what the offensive lineman can provide you in terms of a downfield block on a play. One thing I've been trying to get out of Warhop in his times at the podium, he had one during the OTAs, is what are you doing about not the false starts, but these other flags? And, he said his point of emphasis, they got rid of him, but he's talking about the pre-snap fouls. And I'm wondering, how are you getting offensive linemen to reduce holding penalties? How are you getting to reduce the other declinable fouls? Because those are the ones I'm really concerned about.
I mean, 99% of the time of offensive linemen holds, it's because they're getting beat. So, they can work on footwork. They can work on hand placement, and all those things will help. But it's also the quality of the player. Worse offensive linemen hold more. Better offensive linemen hold less, generally.
I'm with you entirely on that. But a lot of holdings also come on run plays. And I'd say way more than a very high percentage of the time. Yeah, they're made on blocks where the guy has no more impact on the play. He's already lost.
It's they're getting beat, on run plays as well. They've lost whatever leverage or whatever angle that they had. And yeah, so now they're holding. And yes, a lot of the times it doesn't affect the outcome or wouldn't have affected the outcome of the play. But, they still have to call that flag. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to some other results of teams, because I've said the Ravens are completely normal in terms of their being a great team and having incredible records to very good records to not so good, or just slightly above 500 in games that are decided by one score. I just want to go through this with some other teams. The big outliers, you mentioned, are the Chiefs. And so those have to be mentioned. They have to be mentioned separately. But the Chiefs are the dominant team of the era. And it's not that we can let me make sure I can get to my post here on this. So there's the Bengals, the Steelers, maybe else. Okay, here's the Chiefs. They've been the dominant team of the Lamar era. So you look to the beginning of 2018, you're really looking at the best period almost of any team in NFL history. There would be some Patriots teams that would give them a run. But in 40 plus games, they haven't had any 0-0. In 30 to 39 point games, they're 5-1. By the way, their one loss came 38-0 to the Broncos, resting everybody in the last week of last year. 20 to 29, they're 9-1. 10-19, they're 28-3. So let's put all that together. They're 42-5, which is even better than the Ravens in two score games before you get to their one score record. So nobody's claiming that the Ravens have been as good a team as the Chiefs during the Lamar era. They haven't been, but the Chiefs have been a very similar 42-5, won about 89% of their multi-score games as compared to 86% for the Ravens. They've actually played a few less. So you want to have as many multi-score games as possible if you're a great team, because you're like I said, all typically going to win those. Anything to say about that before I move on?
No. Yeah, you said it perfectly. Yep.
All right. And in 0-9 point games, which are the close games, the Chiefs are 37-12 over five seasons. But you go back to the previous two seasons, they were only 11-9. So they're 48-21 from 2018 to the present. That's an unbelievably good record. That's a record of over two thirds. Matter of fact, 48-21 is only one win short of being a 700 team. In those games. So it's unbelievably good. It's not sustainable. And in particular, the last year, the 9-1 is something that the Chiefs are going to need to find other ways to win ball games than going 9-1 again, because they almost certainly will not be able to do that. Now, that said, the Chiefs record is enviable in every dimension. They've won the highest percentage, I would imagine, in the entire NFL of the multi-score games, and they've won also the highest percentage of the one-score games. Quality of opponent does make a difference in this. But the Chiefs have played at least a first place schedule, despite the fact they played in quite a weak division for the bulk of that 7-year period.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's playing in the AFC West. I mean, it's they've pretty much been 500 teams, you know, for the last 5 years, and in part because, you know, the Chiefs are in that division, but in part they've been very mediocre players and mediocre quarterbacks, except for maybe Herbert, you know, over these past years.
But there's also a difference of franchise risk that teams take and their willingness to go out there. So everybody says, you know, the Ravens, oh, their window is right now. They have to win, or they, you know, they, I mean, teams in the AFC West, they don't really have that option. If you're the Denver team, how do you build a team around the quarterbacks that they've had there the last few years? I mean, it's just, it's a fool's errand. So they're not going to go out and play Eagles or Browns ball and try and, you know, bring in everybody they can and stretch out their cap hits for many years. They're going to play a conservative. They're going to play it tight to the vest, which means they're going to be willing to lose more football games in the present to hopefully win more in the future. And they're just, every team in that division is rooting for something to happen to Patrick Mahomes, probably on a weekly basis. And they're also rooting for Mahomes' career to basically be over, which is, they're going to really have to wait that one out, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's going to be another 10 years, I'm afraid. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the Mahomes, Allen, and Lamar show probably for these next 10 years.
Yeah. And they, you know, Bills fans don't have any sympathy for the rest of the AFC East teams in the same degree because they had to live through the entire Brady era where they basically never made the playoffs. So it's a tough situation.
It's crazy. You know, two teams have dominated almost 30 years of that division. Yeah.
I'm not sure, and maybe this is something that would make a good short otherwise, but is it really healthy to have the greatest quarterbacks dominate the game the way they have over the past 25 years? I mean, we've had dominance, utter dominance during the regular season from Manning, from Brady, from Mahomes, a few others, but those are the big ones. Russell Wilson, when he was good, you know, is that healthy for the National Football League to have so much in those guys? And they've made rules that basically protect those guys more than they protect any players. They've slanted all the rules to the offense because they think fans want more offense, but it creates a more unbalanced, it's much harder to win with varying styles of play than it ever has been in the NFL. I mean, the 2000 Ravens were really an outlier in terms of being able to win with a great defense and a weak quarterback.
Oh, buddy, we could have another hour talking about this, because the key to the NFL right now and the way that it's constructed and the way the game is played is to have a great quarterback in order to be consistently good. And if the NFL wants to expand, number one, expand the regular season, which they've talked about, but also have expansion of teams. You know, from 32 to 34, 36, whatever they want to expand to. There has to be another way to consistently win football games other than to have a great quarterback. You have to have a good defense, running game, whatever other aspect. It can't just be about, I have to keep drafting a quarterback and wait till I find that great one, and then I can be a good team and consistently compete for a Super Bowl. That can't be the reason. Yeah.
With you 100% on that. And that is, we'll leave that for another show, Brandon. It's a great topic, though. We should definitely do it. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to look at the division teams as well, just for a second in each case. And by the way, these tweets are out there if you want to just check my timeline on this, but very interesting, because the Steelers, we'll start with, are one of the teams that is cited as being extremely successful and way better in one score games. Well, it's true, but it came at a cost. So in games decided by 40 plus 0-0 and games decided by 30 to 39, the Steelers are 2-3 since the beginning of 2018. In games decided by 20 to 29, they're 6-4. And in games decided by 10 to 19 points, the Pittsburgh Steelers are 9-14. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is a total record of 17-21 in games decided by two scores. It's totally, that is not a good, not, is not a great football team.
That's not where you need to be.
Yeah, it's not where you want to be. And there are 50, 26, and 2 in games decided by 0 to 9. There might be a 9-point game in there that would be not a one-score game, but 50, 26, and 2. Now, that's a great winning percentage in one-score games. And all I'll say is that their inability to generate blowout wins is what's I would consider to be a very serious cause for concern if I were a Steelers fan. It's an unusual profile, and it does not appear to be, to me, to be something that could be sustained. And in particular, if you're going to be that bad in multi-score games, you're just not that good a football team. In fact, you look at it, the Steelers have only outscored their opponents, I believe it's over the last 5 years, by 24 total points. So 4.8 really? Points per season. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, but they've gotten by with it. And I think for people who want to make the case for Tomlin, go ahead and make it on that. It's not a terrible thing to say. I think there are reasons which are about team construction and turnovers and the inability to basically come back in a one score game that the Steelers are going to tend to be better at. With the defense that they have, I think there's lots of reasons for it. I don't think it's all Tomlin, but if you wanted to make the case for Tomlin, go ahead and make it on that basis. But realize also that Mike Tomlin, being at the heart of who the Steelers are, both also has a big say in the draft, certainly in team construction, who they keep, all that stuff, and who they get as coaches, has generated a team that's 4.8 points per year better than their opponents. Okay. And I know he really hasn't had the great quarterback in the last 5 years, tail end of Roethlisberger's career. And then, parade of bozos.
Right.
But that's just not very impressive. While Harbaugh has to basically look at the one score record for his entire career, at 75-75, and probably be brought to task for it to some degree. Ravens fans, and I don't care if any non-Ravens fan takes this or not, need to look at Harbaugh's overall record, which is Hall of Fame worthy and unbelievably good in terms of winning multi-score games, and say that more than makes up for it. And I don't think the Harbaugh detractors will never be ready to say that. Okay, sure. They will never be ready to say it. But the people who even like Harbaugh are kind of, I think, losing the forest for the trees. And I'll get into one other AFC team, but I want to give you a chance to respond to that while I pull this up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, number one, I think, these last 5 years of Tomlin, who I consider a great coach. I mean, I think he does have his flaws here and there. I mean, I think he's one of the, he's one of the more conservative, I'll say, coaches as far as you say cowardly, I say conservative. I don't disagree sometimes. He's conservative with going for it on fourth down. He doesn't always put together great staffs. I mean, when you consider, some of the staffs that Harbaugh has had and how much success, he's had getting coaches, become head coaches or, get position coaches becoming coordinators elsewhere. Tomlin hasn't had that same kind of success over these last few years. So I think that's probably goes to say how good of a staff is he putting together in general. But with these close games and, the record that the Steelers have had over these last few years without Roethlisberger, I think it goes back to another point when we were saying it has to be another way to win games other than having a great quarterback, because he probably won 70%+ of his games with Ben in there when Ben was at his best. And now he's, barely over 500 and can barely beat his opponents by, 5 points a game, which I'm still amazed at. Mm-hmm. 5 points a season, I'm sorry, which I'm still amazed at is a stat. Yeah,
it's pretty incredible. All right, I want to talk about another team, and there's two others in the division. We should hit on both. But the Browns, I'm not saying that the Ravens should be compared to the Browns, but I think you need to understand what a sub 500 football team is. The Browns haven't even been that bad. 2018 to the present, Baker Mayfield, you know, came in the draft mm-hmm. the same year that Lamar did, of course, and Baker wasn't terrible, no matter what people, you know, mm-hmm. want to lay on him. And certainly his year at Tampa, or his years at Tampa, however many it's been now, have been pretty good. So he's been a good quarterback over the period, and they had other guys since then that have not worked out with the mm-hmm. you know, Watson. So we'll just looking at that period, looking at 2018 to the present, the Browns are 0-0 in 40 plus games, 0-4 in games decided by 30-39, 6-9 in games decided by 20-29, and 16-20 in games decided by 10-19. So combined, they're 22-33. They've won 40% of their blowout games. Mm-hmm. By the way, that's bad, but the bottom of the league is going to be a lot lower down than that sure. 40% of wins in such games. They're really bankrupt franchises. Like if you look at the Browns from their, you know, 1-31 era and the years around that, you get a much worse record in multi-score games, I guarantee you. Mm-hmm. It should be apparent if you've only got one win and 31 losses that there's no way to arrange those on a checkerboard that's going to look good.
Right.
But mm-hmm. but anyway, the Browns in one score games have been kind of Steelers light. So they're 31-29 in one score games over that period. Now, you don't need to try and find a reason for it because it's not enough observations to really matter, in my opinion. But the record, very similar to the Ravens over the last 5 years, over the last seven for the Browns. Mm-hmm. So in one score games. Does that mean they've been as good as the Ravens? Well, it doesn't, because they destroyed themselves by winning 40% as opposed to 86% for the Ravens of multi-score games. So that's where the big differential is. And it's where the big differential is from great to terrible across the board. Any sport, I'm telling you, the great teams, I looked at the 1906 Chicago Cubs just this morning because I felt like it coming into this. They won the most games in Major League Baseball history, 116-38 in 1906. They were 33-6 in games decided by 5+ runs, and they won only, and I think it was 67% of their games when they were decided by one run. Now that seems like only 67% of the games. I'll take that. Well, yeah, of course you would, except that the Cubs were a 763 team overall.
Wow.
They won only 7.
763 in general in baseball. That's incredible.
It's outrageous. Yeah. So it's never been duplicated. But anyway,
what would that equate to in a 162 schedule?
Yeah, I'll do that real quick for you. Yeah. 763 enter 162 times, 123.6 wins.
Wow.
Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
okay. So now what do we want to go with this? Okay. The Bengals, actually, one more team in the division since we should be as complete as possible here. The Bengals are they've been good in two score games. They've 0-0 in 40s, 1-1 in 30-39, 5-8 in 20-29 is a little bit concerning, but 18-5 in 10-19. So you look at that and you say, oh, they're 24-14 in games decided by 2+ scores. That is that's probably a good football team at the very minimum. It's not a great record to have that kind of thing, but it's at least a good record. The Bengals have been the worst team in the division in one score games. They're 21-24 in one score game. So that's really been their Achilles heel, even more so than not having a great record in two score games. But you look at the two score record, you certainly say these Bengals teams have been very good for the period.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, a lot of fun data to go out over. I did want to hit you up with one more thing, and that is this. Is some of the Ravens' relative record in one-score game a function of the game continuum, the game script continuum, I'm going to call it. I'm going to define what I mean by this. If you lined up results into four buckets, so you have your two-score losses, your one score losses, your one score wins, and your 2+ score wins. So you have the four buckets we've kind of just defined in aggregating this. Mm-hmm. Do the Ravens have some special characteristic that basically has them putting more games away from that one score bucket into the multi-score bucket in a way that they're losing results in one score? Because they certainly got a great record in two plus score games. And is it something about Lamar Jackson enters the fourth quarter, say, and there's nothing magical, by the way, about the beginning of the first fourth quarter. It could be the end of the first half, could be a lot of things. But the Ravens are exceptionally good at putting away those games and making them two score games. Whereas the Steelers, that's not the way they win a one score game. They win a one score game by punting the ball and trying to make you make a mistake on offense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think obviously what you look at is the running game and what brings, you know, what makes Lamar special. It's if you're up a score, you know, especially, you know, 6 minutes or less in a game. I mean, when you're most fatigued and you've got, you know, the Lamar mesh point on, you know, read options, no matter who the running back is. But I mean, especially now with Derrick Henry, that is, you know, is hard to stop. And if you can run the ball, you can put away a lot of games. And when you force, you know, teams to, you know, lose, hurry up, because now they have to throw to catch up, that helps your defense. And your defense can play one-dimensional, play the pass. They can get after the passer. Your corners and defensive backs can be more aggressive and maybe sit on route, get that interception. And, you know, that's how you put games away. And, yeah, so I think Lamar is the reason why most of the games go from that one score bucket to that two plus score buckets. And, you know, especially, you know, later in the games.
Right. I mean, I agree. It's Lamar is the most everything of the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, he's the most everything.
I call Lamar the sun. Everything revolves around him and he brings light to everything. Yeah.
There you go. he is the cheat code for the Baltimore Ravens. There's no doubt about it. But I would also say that the coaches have done a great job of getting the best out of Lamar during his career. So Lamar handled by other coaches might have been, you know, less great than he has turned out to be. But Greg Roman was the right coach for Lamar Jackson when he came into this league. Greg Roman didn't even hold him back in 2019. And, you know, anybody who thinks that he did, really, generally speaking, during his career, I think is wrong. The Ravens' talent held them back in some ways on offense, but I don't think it was Roman. But, you know, it became time for a change. Monken has worked tremendously well with both the things that worked well about the Roman offense and the things that he's added to it. And they've become one of the best teams in the last 40 years, despite the fact they haven't managed to win a Super Bowl these last two years. And they can't get out of their way.
Yeah. I was actually having a conversation with one of my best friends saying, you know, if Lamar was drafted by another team, he might be looking like Justin Fields, or he might have been playing receiver or running back. And
yeah, boy, would that be right scary?
Team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, with he got drafted by the right team who had a great plan for him, and he's become, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the league because of it.
It's great being a Baltimore fan during the Lamar era. We can't ever not take it for granted, but we also can't take for granted everything that has been done around him to get him there, both in terms of personnel acquired, you know, the coaching, the having the right players and having the right coaches in place to manage the game, you know, offensively and defensively, to support Lamar Jackson appropriately.
Yeah.
And just, you know, in some ways obviously it's a darn shame that they haven't gotten over the hump with that. Anyway, getting back to what I was talking about, I think what I want to do is create a flow diagram of how games change maybe late. Now, trying to decide if I wanted to define that as the second half or the fourth quarter or whatever, from one bucket to another. And if there's a net flow that goes generally to the right, where they're pulling away in games late, or there's a lot of net flow from pulling away in games late, as opposed to coming back into a one score game late. There's been some of that this last year, the Dallas game.
And I think a lot of that was the defense, you know, not figuring things out on the back end.
If a general characteristic of the Baltimore Ravens over a 7 year period has been to basically put games away very effectively, then it'd be easy to see how their one score record is not going to reflect the greatness of the team in the same way that the two score record would.
Sure. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brandon, always a pleasure talking football with you. And I appreciate all the research you did for this episode, you know, to look at the penalties and look at the turnovers and have some good information on that coming in. Always good. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at, bcroxton99. Love talking football. I'll be at the stadium rooting on the team. Hopefully we get the Super Bowl this year.
All right. Are you going to the, stadium, PSL holders event?
Yes, I'll be there and the practice as well. Yep.
Okay, great. We'll see you there. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do something nice for the show, tell a friend about it. As always, we're going to continue on with camp notes. Keep an eye out for those. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Take care. Talk to you next time.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.